Today.
The views expressed on AM 360 by the host, hostesses, or guests are their own, and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Share Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific and personal medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to consult an advisor for your specific circumstances.
You are part of our 600,000 listening level, American Muslim 360.
That's interesting.
Assalamu alaikum. This is American Muslim 360 radio broadcast.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim. Malik Yawm al-Din. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
American Muslim 360 is
too legit, too legit to quit.
We will never quit. American Muslim 360, your number one Muslim radio station.
Can't touch this. Can't touch this.
Community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at cwsconline@gmail.com. That's cwsconline@gmail.com. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. May peace be upon you. This is CARE on Air, the Civil Rights News Hour. I am your host, Elsin Saleem. I'm the Communications Director of the Georgia Chapter on Council on American Islamic Relations. How is everyone today? I hope you're having a great week, a great Thursday. We have a very important subject to talk about this week. And before we do so, I actually want to talk about something that I've experienced the past week. I am a Georgia State student. I study political science and journalism, and one of the great things about the political science department is the Model United Nations and Model Arab League programs. As a part of the Model Arab League program, I got the opportunity to travel to Bosnia and Turkey this past week as a representative, and it was such a great experience, and I think it is very important that as young Muslim students, we reach out and we try to take up as many opportunities as we can, especially in these instances where people are paying for our trips, right? So we get the opportunity to travel. We get the opportunity to learn about different cultures. And specifically for in this case, I had the opportunity to visit not one but two Muslim-based countries. Turkey is Muslim majority, while Bosnia has 50% Muslim demographic. And subhanAllah, the ability to hear the adhan out loud in the different countries is just amazing. And I really do hope that everyone gets the opportunity as students to take advantage of programs like this. So if you don't have a Model Arab League or Model UN program, please contact me. We can try to set one up. But if you do have one, please take advantage of those programs. I think that especially as a young Muslim who have to balance our lives in terms of our Americanness and our Muslimness and our Arabness and our different ethnicities, it gets kind of difficult. And when you go back to countries that are Muslim majority and are rich in Islamic history, we get to grasp onto our Muslim identity that much more. I remember the first time that I heard the adhan in Turkey, it was so emotional for me. It was such an emotional experience. And then moving on to Bosnia, especially because the war was so still very new, there's still bullet holes and craters in the buildings. And seeing how Islam allowed for a kind of peace, a settling of peace within the people, it's so contagious there. And that was so uplifting. And again, I can't express it enough, the importance of taking advantage of the programs that are open to us, especially when it comes into the context of being able to experience different cultures. And not only do the people who you are experiencing in different countries get the opportunity to learn about American culture and how Muslim Americans operate in American society, but obviously for you as well, the ability to experience and to understand different cultures, it really creates a more wholesome persona for you, and that's extremely important, especially as young people. I actually wish that as a Muslim community, we would have more of an emphasis on traveling. Traveling does not really mean that you have to go to all these luxury hotels and then have a luxurious vacation, but traveling is about the cultural exchange and talking to people and learning about their experiences, and that's what it's all about. So I hope that in the future, we get, as a Muslim community, we have a traveling program that, you know, people get to experience other people and that cultural exchange happens. So today we are actually going to be talking about a really important case. Soon, Brother Edward Ahmed Mitchell is going to be joining me. He's going to be discussing the Sharmila Powell case, one of the biggest cases that we have taken as CARE Georgia. There he is right now, the man of the hour. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Edward.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you, Thousan?
Good, alhamdulillah. How are you?
I'm good, alhamdulillah. Good. You know, we're missing our... Hold on.
Our headset. We have to get our headset.
Yes, inshallah.
Okay. We have to be official, you guys.
Yes,
this is super important.
Yes, okay. Very official. Okay. All right. Can you hear me now? All right. Continue.
Yeah, so I was just saying that this is one of the biggest cases, perhaps the biggest case that CARE Georgia has taken on. And I think it's especially given the fact that we just had a hearing, Monday.
Yeah.
It's important for us to talk about this case. And with that being said, Edward, you feel free to take it away. Just for the audience's information, we will have a Q&A section at the very end. So if you are listening in, American Muslim 360, just call in. And if you are on Facebook Live, feel free to leave a comment in the section below. Without further ado, let's talk about the factual parameters of this case.
Sure. So this case is based on an incident that happened 12 years ago in Wayne County, Georgia, which is located about 3.5 hours away from Atlanta, down south. So it's a criminal issue, right? Normally we do not handle criminal matters at all, but I'll get to why this is relevant to us. But first let me tell you what the allegations are. So what the state alleged 12 years ago is that a man named William Powell and his wife drove to a residence in Jessup, Georgia, where Mr. Powell went inside with another man and attempted to rob two drug dealers.
Mm-hmm.
They're in there for hours, or the state can never get clear about how long this went on. But apparently a robbery of some sort allegedly occurred. At some point, a shootout breaks out. Two people end up dying. One of the robbers and one of the drug dealers being robbed is shot. And Mr. Powell allegedly, according to the state, then leaves and drives off with his wife, who the state alleged was in the car the whole time while this happened and then drove him away as kind of a getaway driver. So this happened in a small county, rural Georgia. After the incident occurred, one of the surviving drug dealers runs next door and tells his neighbor that he was attacked by six men driving a red truck from a city in the area, okay? Later, when he speaks to the police, he changes the story. And he tells them, no, actually, I was attacked by this man, William Powell, and also his wife was there, and his wife was involved. I saw her outside, and she fired a shot at me as I was leaving and missed me.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result of that, the police then arrest her, our client, Mrs. Powell, and her husband, in their home state of Maryland. Days later, they're in Maryland. They arrest them and charge them being involved in this incident. So that's the original allegation that occurred, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Powell very firmly denied involvement in this at all. She said, I did not rob anyone. She did say that her husband did go out that night for some amount of time. She didn't know what he did, and she had some conflicts with him because of his personal behavior and his personal conduct. But she, a Muslim woman, a mother of three kids, said, look, I'm not involved in whatever happened. It wasn't me. I'm not involved in it. And she refused to take any sort of deal for a very long time. Her position was, I didn't do it, let me go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the factual, and that's just originally what happened 12 years ago.
Okay, perfect. And so why don't we discuss what a habeas relief, that is the substance of the argument. So what is a habeas relief so
yes.
that people can understand?
So habeas corpus relief is when you go to the court, usually after someone has been convicted, but this one usually happens in the criminal sphere, after someone's been convicted of a crime, you go to the court and you ask them, the court, to set this person free because they're being wrongfully imprisoned based on this violation of the Constitution. So that's where we're at now. But before we get to that, we have to explain how we got there. So 12 years ago, right, they get arrested.
Mm-hmm.
She denies responsibility. They end up going on trial in this small town. A few things to know about the trial that occurred. Number one, all-white jury. Miss Powell and her husband were black. Number two, they end up being put on trial together at the same time,
mm-hmm.
even though Miss Powell wanted to go to trial by herself, because you could argue the evidence against her husband was maybe arguably stronger than the evidence against her, which is very weak, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they end up being forced to go to trial together at
wow.
the same time. Number three, the jury was, you could say, biased. Half the jurors personally knew one of the victims, one of the men who died. Half the jurors knew this man. He was considered a pillar of the community.
Mm-hmm.
He was a member of the hunting club. He worked for the company, the county's largest employer. Mm-hmm. And this is a small county. I think they have 18,000, 30,000 total in the whole county, right? So he's very well known. In fact, they had an anniversary memorial for him 1 year after his death. Half the jurors knew this man. 11 of the 12 jurors admitted they'd been exposed to pre-trial publicity.
Wow.
That is talking about the case, media coverage of the case, newspaper coverage,
how many
radio,
out of
11 out of 12.
Wow.
11 out of 12, right? Which, by the way, in Georgia, the Georgia standard is very, very low. That is, you can have jurors who know about the case, all this stuff, and that's technically okay.
Mm.
The standard in Georgia is that if they've been exposed to inflammatory, unduly expensive, or factually inaccurate pretrial publicity, that's a problem.
Okay.
And we would argue they were exposed to that sort of detail about the case.
Okay.
Allegations about Sharmila that were speculative, her picture in a hijab splashed over the newspaper over and over again, speculation about how it happened, why it happened,
mm-hmm.
who's responsible. And then a very key part of the case is that at some point the state offers a deal. They say, okay, fine. Mr. Powell, if you will enter a plea of guilty to certain charges, we'll let your wife essentially go free.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the deal they were willing to take. Because the whole point was she was not willing to go to jail
mm-hmm.
for something she said she didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the deal that she was going to go free.
Mm-hmm.
When that deal went in front of the judge at a pretrial hearing, the judge rejected the deal, said, no, I'm not accepting this. And he basically made comments indicating he believed her and them to be guilty of something.
Wow.
And so that there was a front page newspaper article in the local paper about that court hearing and what the judge said.
Mm.
And so that further tainted the jury
yep.
pool. And then when they finally got to the courtroom, when it was time to pick a jury, they had to excuse 42% of the jurors because
wow.
of bias issues. And then the few that they got were, as I said, biased anyway. So they end up going to trial. And here's the thing that, well, let me ask you, here's how we get to the point where it's relevant to care. Why do we even care about this case, right?
Right.
At trial, Ms. Powell was not wearing a hijab
mm-hmm.
because the jail banned her from wearing a hijab.
Mm.
She and her attorney decided not to fight the ban on her hijab because it occurred to them, maybe we're better off with the jury not knowing you're Muslim. Because
right.
this is the year 2009.
Mm-hmm.
9/11 was 9 years earlier. You know, you got all this hostility to President Obama because of the false claim that he's a Muslim. You know, the Iraq War is still going. You know, all this stuff is happening. So they said, you know, maybe in this, you know, rural county, very conservative, maybe it's better they just don't know I'm Muslim. So that's not an issue at all. So she goes to trial not wearing a hijab.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reason why the jurors should know that she's Muslim. Here's what happens at trial. The state first deliberately introduces evidence to identify her as a Muslim, deliberately and unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Then they get her on the stand and attack her for being a Muslim. And then her defense attorney tries to clean it up during closing argument by saying, well, just because she's a Muslim doesn't mean she's a killer.
Right.
So these three things happen during the trial. And if you want, I can go into detail about what
happened. We will do that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, at the end of the day, she's convicted, found guilty, and sentenced to essentially the rest of her natural life in prison.
Wow.
And that was 12 years ago.
Wow.
We get a call from her family earlier this year. They let us know what happened. And initially, we're pretty much saying, no, we don't get involved. It's a criminal matter. But when we find out about the anti-Muslim issue, we go, okay, hold on. This is something that we should work on because you may not be sitting in jail but for the issue of anti-Muslim bigotry.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, so that's actually one of the things I wanted to go ahead and
sure.
do. So I have in front of me a copy of the brief in support of the petition for habeas relief. And let's go ahead and talk about the arguments here. We talked
sure.
about the background.
Yes.
There are, what, two arguments?
Right. Well, there's more, but two key arguments for me. Yes.
Okay. So let's go ahead and talk about that. So the first argument on page
yes.
9,
yes.
The first argument says that the trial court permitted irrelevant and prejudicial attacks on Sharmila Powell based on her religious identity. So is that let's go ahead and talk about that,
yes.
And yeah, so take it away.
Okay, so we're making a few different arguments. So the first argument, as you noted, is we're saying the trial court violated the law by allowing the prosecution to attack Ms. Powell based on her religion, which anyone who knows anything about American law should know that's not okay. You can't get a Jewish person to stand and say, hey, you did the crime because you're Jewish or Christian or whatever. That,
right.
That's dumb, number
right.
one. And number two, it's illegal, okay? And yet that is essentially what happened here.
Mm.
So first, as I mentioned, the jury would not have known she was a Muslim unless they had seen her picture in the paper, right? But during the trial itself, she didn't mention religion. Her side did not mention religion. So the first thing the prosecution does is they unnecessarily introduce a copy of her driver's license in evidence because her driver's license has a picture of her wearing a hijab. Now, the prosecution says, well, look, Judge, we just want to introduce this evidence to show that she illegally purchased a firearm that was similar to the firearm we think was used in the shooting.
Mm.
Her defense says, well, look, we're not disputing that she had bought a weapon. It's legal to own a weapon. And, in fact, their explanation was that her husband had a mistress. And this mystery had been threatening Mrs. Powell, and so she wanted to buy a gun to protect herself. So she had a perfectly legitimate reason for buying a gun. So the defense said, look, Judge, we'll stipulate to that evidence. That means, Judge, we'll admit she did buy a gun, she used her license, we'll admit that is true, and therefore you don't need to introduce the license.
Right.
The prosecutor and the defense said it'd be inflammatory to introduce her license because of the picture of her in the hijab.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecutor says, and let me get the exact quote right here, it's the way she appeared at the time. She chose to look that way. this is what he says to the judge. And the judge lets the license come in evidence, right? So now we have evidence identifying her as a Muslim because of the hijab, okay? Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. Do they let the jury know she's a Muslim?
Right.
That's the first step that happens. Now, that brings us to the second thing. Once the jury knows she's a Muslim, then they attack her based on her religion.
Okay, right.
So she decides to testify in her own defense. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, she did not have to do. If you're a charge of the crime, you don't have to get on the stand and defend yourself. You can just be quiet and say the state has to prove you guilty. She said, no, I'm going to get up and testify in my own defense.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, her husband did not do that. Her husband maintained silence. But
right.
She said, no, I'm getting up, I'm defending myself. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So she gets up there, she testifies, I didn't do it, didn't rob anyone, my husband went out for some amount of time, came back home, we argued, but I was not involved in robbing anyone. Okay? So she gets her testimony. When the prosecutor gets a chance to examine her, he asks her a few questions, and then he says, quote, you don't believe in taking oaths, do you? Her attorney objects.
Mm-hmm.
Judge objection. The judge says overruled. The prosecutor keeps going. She says, yes, I do believe in taking oaths. He says, what are your beliefs about taking oaths and telling the truth in our courts of law?
What does our mean?
Right. What does the our mean? Right. So again, he asks her, What are your beliefs about taking oaths and telling the truth in our courts of law? She says, the same as everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
He says, they are. She says, yes, they are. And then he comes out and says, right, what he comes out and says, the exact quote, you're not free from having to tell the truth in a non-Muslim courtroom.
And that was allowed.
Yes, this is allowed. He says, you're not free from having to tell the truth in a non-Muslim courtroom. She responds, no, my religion does not interfere with any oath within the United States, period. My religion is my religion. I'm a Muslim. That's it. I believe in one God. I don't believe that Jesus, may peace be upon him, is God. That's what my religion basically states. So she's put in a position where she has to deny that she's a liar because she's a Muslim and then explain her religious beliefs, right? So the judge allows this to happen. He essentially accuses her of being a liar because she is a Muslim.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
The fact that it was allowed by the judge for this to happen is just...
Right. Right. So that's the fact of what happened, right? And then our legal argument is, you know, we have a legal argument we're making about why this is wrong, but that's what happened.
Mm. So the second argument here is that Sharmila Powell was denied her right to a fair and impartial jury because of extensive news coverage tying to her crime.
Right, right. So what we have here is this is our case file. So this has a lot of the evidence in it. So when we brought to court with the judge when we went to court on Monday, we tracked down a lot of the news coverage of the case that happened back in the day, 12 years ago. And then we presented some of those articles to the judge so she could see for herself, you know, what was going on and what these articles were. So the articles covered everything from the shooting itself, how the neighbors reacted to the shooting, the search for the suspects, the arrest of Mrs. Powell and her husband, their extradition back to Georgia, the prosecution's allegations about what they supposedly did, the plea deal that was rejected by the judge. Basically, the entire prosecution story from beginning to end was told in the media. Like, if you read the media, you would know exactly what the prosecution claimed happened, and you would know that Sharmila is a Muslim. You would essentially know everything about the case if you followed the media coverage. All the important stuff, you would know. All from the prosecution side, but you wouldn't know anything about her side of the story.
Right.
Only their side of the story.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and there's three other sections under the second argument.
Yes.
So the first one, jurors were exposed to unduly extensive, inaccurate, and inflammatory publicity that reflected an inherently prejudicial atmosphere.
Prejudicial.
So there's, the fact that this brief is 26 pages, how is this allowed in court?
Well, that's the funny thing is that it shouldn't be, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you would think, and this is, again, why we got involved, because it seems this is obviously wrong. This is a bad, fatally flawed trial.
Mm.
But the way the criminal justice system works is it's really To some extent, it's tilted in favor of defendants insofar as the state cannot convict you without proving you guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
Mm.
But in terms of the state's ability to stack the evidence against you, the state has a lot of power. I mean,
yeah.
The state has a lot of power to build a case. And as you know, I was a prosecutor myself back
mm-hmm.
in the day. I never had anything this serious, but I do know the state has a lot of power
mm-hmm.
to build a case against someone. And especially in this environment where it's a, again, small town, you got an all-white jury, extensive media coverage, half the jury knew the man had been killed. So, you know, it's kind of stacked in your favor. You've got a great advantage going into the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so it shouldn't have been allowed, is our opinion.
Yeah.
But the law does favor the state to some extent. The law gives them a lot of flexibility to get away with a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But not this much, we would argue.
Right. And so you just had the hearing on Monday. How
yes.
does that go?
So, yeah. So getting back to the habeas hearing. So we had the habeas hearing. And that's where we go before the judge and we say, look, judge, the trial was bad. We need you to vacate her convictions
mm-hmm.
and give her a new trial. So we traveled down to South Georgia on Sunday, and we stayed there overnight and got ready. And then in the morning we went to court, and it went well, I thought. Thank God. We called Ms. Powell to the stand to testify
mm-hmm.
about what happened in her trial, what she experienced. We called an expert witness, Dr. Abbas Barzagar, who is a former professor at Georgia State University, a PhD in religious studies, and also the director of CARE National's Research and Advocacy Department. He testified about Islamophobia and the impact it could have on people exposed to it. And then we introduced evidence. A lot of the evidence you see here, we introduced that to the judge.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, the state asked for more time because they want to try to bring in a witness on their side.
Mm-hmm.
We said, that's fine. We'll give you more time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the case is not over yet. We delivered our part. We might bring in more evidence as well. But we thought it went well.
Mm-hmm.
The judge was very nice, very respectful, listened, I think, openly.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a nice time. It's very nerve-wracking anytime you're going to court,
right.
Especially with someone's, you know, freedom on
mm-hmm.
on in your hands,
mm-hmm.
in the hands of, it's in the control of the law, but, you know,
yeah,
to the extent
right.
that you are the one doing the work,
mm-hmm.
You know, very nerve-wracking.
Right, yeah. So what are next steps?
So next step is we have to finalize the next court date. Looks like it'll be before the end of the year, God willing, and then we'll have to decide you know, what additional evidence we're going to present, if any, how to respond to the state's arguments, whatever those are, and then go from there, God.
Essential.
Obviously, we don't want to lay out our strategy too much, but,
right.
You know, we think that we've got the facts on our side. We believe anyone looking at this fairly should rule that, at least on the religious issue, this was not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is allowed, that means you could have someone on trial who's Jewish or Christian or Mormon or whatever. You could say, isn't it true because you're Mormon or a Jew or a Christian, you can lie in court?
Right.
That if this, if you can do that, so most of you can do it to anybody.
Right.
And that just cannot be.
Right. Have there been similar cases to this case before, not only in Georgia but in a national level?
We found other cases in which religion was raised inappropriately,
mm.
yes. Nothing this severe, I think. And in some cases, it might be relevant. So, for example, we found a case where there was a man who essentially ran a cult,
mm-hmm.
and as part of the cult, he was telling he was engaging in financial fraud,
mm-hmm.
and he was telling the cult members they can't tell on him, and so the cult itself was relevant to the case, because if he was telling witnesses they had to lie because he's the cult leader, then you could at that point examine him about what are the beliefs of this cult, then it's relevant, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, the allegations were robbery. Nothing to do with religion at all. So there's no relevance whatsoever. So
mm-hmm.
we did find some of their cases where religion was raised inappropriately and also appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
This case fell into the inappropriate box.
Okay. And what would you say for individuals who are experiencing this, especially in smaller towns?
Yes.
How can they, you know, protect themselves from things like this?
Yeah.
What are steps that they can take?
Well, you know, first of all, stay out of trouble. I mean, sometimes
mm-hmm.
you get into trouble, you know, through no fault of your own,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, to the extent that you can avoid getting in trouble, do that first and foremost. Number two, you know, if you do run into legal trouble for whatever reason, justly or unjustly, right, you want to make sure you know what your rights are so you can defend your rights, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you see someone, you know, weaponizing religion against you in court,
mm-hmm.
time out. That is not, you need to call us, you need to let your attorney know, you need to, you know, that is not acceptable, right?
Right.
That is not, okay, don't wait 10 years and then go, oh, by the way, this happened to me. No, right away,
mm-hmm.
you know, let people know this happened to me and is not acceptable. Number three, you know, make sure that, you know, when you're going to, before you even end up in court, when you're dealing with your lawyer, let them know what your religious beliefs are. Let them know, you know, let them address, if that's going to be an issue, let's talk about it beforehand and get ready for how you're going to address that problem. Because in this case, you know, the attorneys knew about the religion. They just deliberately said, we're not going to introduce religion at all to avoid the issue. But when the state introduced it anyway, the attorneys were kind of caught flat. So I don't think they handled it well. I thought they failed to handle it appropriately. Mm-hmm. And so you want to make sure that if it is going to come up in an adverse way, you're ready to address it appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a matter of having good lawyers and getting ready in advance. And for Muslims, you know, the great danger would be that if you're visibly Muslim and you're going to court for some reason, the greater danger is not that someone openly says, calls you out like this, because at least then you know it.
Mm-hmm.
The greater danger is someone secretly holds a view and they don't say it out loud, and then you can't address it.
Right.
That's the danger.
Right. And as a journalism major, we talk about the issues of exposure of news to jurors. So how, because news is so prevalent in our society, we're exposed to it on a daily basis, especially with now mobile news features. We're on social media. That's where a lot of the news comes up.
Right.
How do we address that in court?
Right.
But it's not only about the fact that she's Muslim. It's also that she's Muslim and she was framed in a certain way in the news.
Right. Right. So, I mean, media coverage of Muslim descendants, as you know, can be radically different than media coverage of others.
Right.
If you take a Muslim woman hijabi compared to the media coverage of a white male suspect, chances are you're going to see something very different, right? And we know that with the coverage of terrorism incidents, when a Muslim is accused of committing an act of what can be described as terrorism, political violence, religious violence, it's breaking news, everyone stops what they're doing, it's CNN, Fox, MSNBC. When someone of a different background commits a similar crime, you know, maybe it's not breaking news. Maybe it's not something that Trump is tweeting about. Maybe it's not something that's got everyone on edge. So it's similarly in local news coverage, you know, when a Muslim is involved in something, even if it had nothing to do with religion whatsoever, you know, you can see a very different reaction. So I think for, you know, reporters, that's something they've got to be conscious of, is to make sure they are treating crimes equally, right? If you rob someone and you rob someone, and the only difference is your religion, there should not be a radical difference in what kind of media coverage is had. And when you go on trial, certainly, you know, it should not be relevant what your religion was either way. The only relevant thing should be, did you commit the crime or did you not?
Can we talk about what Dr. Barzagar discussed as an expert witness?
Sure, sure. Yeah. Okay. So we wanted him to highlight for the judge, number one, what is Islamophobia?
Right.
Because, you know, again, we were in South Georgia. You know, maybe this is not a familiar concept, you know, all around the state. So we wanted to testify about what is anti-Muslim bigotry, what is the history of anti-Muslim bigotry, and how dangerous is anti-Muslim bigotry in twisting the minds of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first thing. Number two, we wanted to get into this specific bit of anti-Muslim bigotry.
Right.
Because what the prosecutor, we think, was doing was raising the trope that Muslims cannot be loyal to, you know, whatever country they happen to live in, then Muslims don't have to tell the truth, or even that Muslims can lie about anything, right?
Right.
And so actually in court we got into this issue of what is taqiyya, because anti-Muslim hate groups will often raise this what they call taqiyya, and they have a completely different meaning for it than what it actually means. According to them, it means Muslims will lie about anything and everything. They can plot to take over the country, and they won't tell you about it because it's taqiyya, right?
Mm.
What is stupid. It's not true at all, right? What the word actually means, according for Sunni Muslims, is that if someone put a gun to your head and said, I hate Muslims, if you're a Muslim, I'm going to kill you, are you a Muslim?
Mm-hmm.
You could say, me? No. Muslim? No. I'm just wearing this for style, right? I'm not a Muslim, right? You could do that, and there'd be no sin on you for doing that.
Right.
Islam is not a suicide bag. If you had to verbally deny your religious identity to save your life, you could do that, and God would not hold that against you as long as in your heart you remain faithful. That's what the concept actually refers to.
Mm.
But anti-Muslim hate groups say, no, what it actually means is,
you can lie whenever you want.
Right. Muslims can lie about anything and everything, and they're plotting to do all this stuff, and they're just lying about it, right, which is not what the word actually means. So we think the prosecutor was trying to get into that in this remark. So we had Dr. Barzagar talk about what is that conspiracy theory and how dangerous is it, because here's how dangerous it is. If you believe, you as a person who's not Muslim, if you believe that Islam allows a Muslim to lie, then how can you ever trust anything they say?
Right.
Even when they're telling the truth, they might be lying. So
right.
what the prosecutor essentially did was taint everything she had to say by saying, essentially implying that because of her religion, she's free to lie, and therefore, how can you trust anything she says?
Right.
Even when she says, no, I'm not lying, how do you know? Maybe she's really lying, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way to undermine your ability to believe. Even you won't believe your own eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen this with anti-Muslim hate groups where they'll see a peaceful Muslim who loves their country, worships devoutly, raise their kids, acting perfectly normal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the evidence is in front of you. This is not a dangerous person.
Mm-hmm.
But because you believe this conspiracy theory, you'll go, oh, well, it's all part of the plan.
Right.
It's all part of the lie, right? So even when the evidence is in front of you
mm-hmm.
that Muslims are not dangerous to you,
mm-hmm.
you still think they are because you still think they are lying.
Right.
So that's how dangerous the conspiracy theory is. And it's very similar to what was said about Catholics and Jews in this country, that loyal to a foreign power, plotting to take over the country. All this stuff was said about communities before. So
mm-hmm.
it's just the same bigotry, different century.
Right. So I want to re-highlight what the bigger picture is for this
yes.
case.
Yes.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about what precedent this case is going to set.
Yes.
Inshallah, you know, if we get the victory.
If we win, God willing, especially on the religious point, if the judge rules that this was wrong,
mm-hmm.
And that it was so wrong that it requires us to vacate your conviction, it'll send a signal to the courts that, number one, you cannot allow anti-Muslim bigotry, that
mm-hmm.
anti-Islamophobia is just as unacceptable as anti-Semitism or racism in a court of law.
Mm-hmm.
It will, I think, encourage prosecutors to be more careful in what they do in the future,
mm-hmm.
To not try to weaponize religion to win a case.
Mm-hmm.
And I think obviously it'll be a great victory for the Muslim community to know that, you know, their hard work of donating to CARE Georgia doing this work has paid off, that a woman who was on her way to spending decades more of her life in prison now has a chance at freedom. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of us can, you know, say that we participated, whether you donated or supported us or made dua, we can all feel like we played a role in, you know, doing something really positive, God.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big picture, I think, look, legally and also for us as an organization. We win, God.
Inshallah, we win.
So
winning the trial is one step, but how do we undo such a long history
yeah.
and ingrained Islamophobia and discrimination towards Muslims, especially because of the fact that she is both Muslim and black,
right?
Right? So how do we, what are the things that we can do to reverse that
yeah.
that bias?
Yeah,
some people can't even recognize it. So
right.
what do we do?
Well, look, I mean, I think people always have to remember, think of what America was like in 1960, what our judicial system was like, what our voting system was like, what daily life was like. Today it is radically different, and I would say radically better in terms of voting rights, segregation, fairness in the court system, access to lawyers, the ability to try to combat racial bias in the courtroom. All that is better, but still really bad in many ways, right? It's not, the problem has not been solved, but it has gotten much, much, much better. And so that should encourage us to the belief that things can keep getting better, that we can look up 20 years from now and things can be much better for Muslims and others who are now regularly targeted in the criminal justice system, and better for those who are always targeted, namely African Americans. So
right.
progress can happen, God willing. So I think for Muslims in particular, Muslim activists, some things that we should be working on are, number one, electing prosecutors who have a more, I don't use the word progressive, that's a very political word. I want to say a more merciful understanding of the law and how to apply it.
Mm.
I'll put it that way, right? A more merciful understanding of the law and how to apply it, right? Not prosecutors who think that handing out time like candy is the best way to address a crime or to reduce crime, right? But prosecutors who look at crime as a holistic matter. How? Why did this person commit the crime?
Yes.
What led them to this point? Are they just, you know, do they have, you know, what led them to this point? And can we rehabilitate them,
mm-hmm.
or are they so far gone that we really do have to consider more punitive measures, right? But
mm-hmm.
asking that question in the first place instead of just assuming that we've got to take the most punitive measures. And I think having elected district attorneys who think like that you know, would be very helpful to changing how prosecutions happen.
I mean, the Muslim community struggles with voter participation in the onset. So
right.
I think particularly in this case, this should be in another.
And that's
region.
A local thing. That's a local election where people may not be thinking about it, but something you should be thinking about, who you're electing to your local DA's office.
Yes.
In your locality. Also, you know, obviously supporting organizations that are in this fight for criminal justice reform, whether that's the NAACP, Black Lives Matter, or other groups that are, you know, doing this kind of work. I know you may disagree with them about some issues, but if you disagree with, for example, Black Lives Matter about certain social issues, that's fine, but work with them on the things you do agree with,
right?
It doesn't have to be a purity test for
right.
any organization, including CARE, right? If you agree with them on something, work with us on that. You disagree on that, don't work with us on that issue. But,
right.
you know, work with us on the things you agree with us on.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's how we can do it as a collective.
Right.
What can we do as individuals, especially within our own communities? How
right.
can we change that, those biases?
Well, you know, I think for the Muslim community, you know, racial bias can be a problem internally, right?
Right.
I mean, that could be a problem. And I don't mean just racial bias against African Americans, but also, you know, African Americans having some biases against immigrants. They can go, I've seen that go both ways, right?
Right.
We can all have these latent biases that we need to improve upon and work upon and confront and address. And I think a key way to do that is for us to have sympathy for each other when we're both targeted by the system. What I mean by that is that when us as African-American Muslims see our immigrant Muslim brothers being targeted with religious profiling at the airport, racial profiling at the airport, being entrapped or all that, that's something that we care about, right? And
right.
we should work to combat. And when our immigrant brothers and sisters see African-American Muslims being targeted, you know, with police brutality and, you know, mass surveillance in our communities and the other things that might be more unique to African-Americans in general, that they feel sympathy for that. They don't just wait for someone who is of a certain culture to get jammed by the system and then care. They care about it, you know, already for the African-Americans who are being impacted and Latinos and others every day. So, you know, let's just have we can be impacted in different ways, but let's have sympathy for each other and try to help each other even when it's not directly impacting us, because eventually it can come around to you.
Right, right.
Mail off a bit. And also make sure your kids, and this is something that we also need to do, that, you know, oftentimes people are arrested for crimes because they committed a crime.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for our kids especially, don't get caught up doing dumb stuff. I know Muslims have been arrested for Medicare fraud, you know, just stupid stuff. Like, what are you doing, bro? What are you doing, bro? So, yeah, we also need to have some personal responsibility to say, you know, if you're a Muslim and you do something stupid, you're in even more danger than, you know, the other guy next door does something stupid.
Right.
So you really don't need to be, it's bad to commit a crime in general,
mm-hmm.
but you really don't need to be floating, you know, flouting the law,
right.
given the challenges you're going to face in the criminal justice system that others may not face. So
right.
that's another thing that I think we can be, you know, funny about, but also frank. Look,
right.
be smart. Young people, don't be doing stupid stuff. Older people, definitely don't be doing stupid stuff. Don't put yourself at risk of facing Islamophobia in the criminal justice.
And on the other side of that coin, also paying attention to at-risk youth or individuals
right.
who are at risk of committing these kind of crimes.
Right.
Because there's normally a motive.
Right.
That's what's,
or some life
right.
circumstance. I mean,
right.
some people, you know, if you are starving,
mm-hmm.
if your parents have kicked you out, if you are in some circumstance, you know, you may feel you have no choice but to do something that's going to get you in trouble, right?
Right?
Or like many young people, you just make a dumb mistake, which young people do, and alhamdulillah, you know, may Allah shield us from facing the consequences
yeah.
of our youthful errors.
I mean,
but, you know, you may get caught up, and so, you know, to the extent that happens, let's deal with it, but the best you can avoid in the first place would be ideal.
So let's talk about other organizations or other lawyers that have helped during this case.
Yes, very good point, yes. So Amr Kazi of the law firm Fish & Richardson has been working with us on this case pro bono. They've been a great help. They've helped us depose a witness, collect evidence. He was with us in South Georgia, so they've been a great help doing this pro bono. We've been relying on advice from various other lawyers in the community. I don't know if they want me to name check them, but, you know, we've been asking other lawyers for advice about how to handle this because it's a criminal matter, so it's unique
mm-hmm.
in terms of what we do. So, yeah, we've had some great help from other people in the community working on this case. And we've had community members donate to us specifically to help with this case because it does take – this has taken up so much time.
Right.
I'm not even sure how much. It's taken up so much time working on this one
and
case.
A lot of resources as well.
Right, right. So we appreciate the donations of people to help us
mm-hmm.
with this case. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are now at 12:44. Let's go ahead and open up the floor for questions.
And if not, there's nothing wrong with ending early.
Okay.
And what we'll say is we haven't decided on our guests for the week after next, I think. So if anyone has suggestions for guests you want us to bring on, last time we had Shannon Dowdo,
yes,
who did a great job. Let us know. If you want to come on to give a guest, let us know. Or a topic you want us to cover in particular, let us know how to do that. And same for those of you on American Muslim 360 listening in. If you have any topic you want us to cover, let us know, inshallah, because this is supposed to be beneficial to the community, inshallah.
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 All right.
With that, I don't think we have any questions.
Because if you win the case, when can the sister get out of jail?
Oh, right. Good question. So if we were to win this stage of the case, she probably would not go free right away. What would happen is the case would get kicked back to the original prosecutor's office, and then they would have to decide, are they going to try to prosecute her again, or are they just going to let her go, or maybe make a deal.
Mm.
The original prosecutor who did all this, he died several years ago, so he's gone.
Mm.
And so, with a new prosecutor there, maybe there would be a new decision made about how to handle the case. So I would expect if we do win, I honestly think the state would either drop the case or make a deal that would allow her to go free based on the time she's already spent in jail. So if we win, I would be hopeful she would go free next year, inshallah. Yeah.
Are there any other questions from you, T?
Any other questions? That's a good question. Thank you, Brad. I think that was
it. That was it?
Yeah. Inshallah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, with that being said, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Care on Air. Our next show will be on Thursday, November 14th at 12 p.m. So like Brother Edward said, if you have any ideas as to what you want to hear, or perhaps maybe you want to come on the show and talk about something, please let us know. You can contact us on Instagram. You can contact us on Facebook. You can email us. You can call us. We want to hear from you, so please don't hesitate to do so.
You go to caregeorge.com for all of our contact information, www.caregeorge.com.
All right, with that, assalamu alaikum, everyone.
Assalamu alaikum. Good job, Uncle.
Bye-bye.
I'll close up on here. All right, thank you, AM360. We'll close out with, if there are no questions here, then we will close out AM360 with public service announcements, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum.